This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Kuritzen. As always, my co-host, Steve Smee, is joining me.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going out there?
We got another really good guest for you. Matt, I really appreciate you doing the show because, as you know, today is the one-year anniversary of Dallas McCarver's death. So joining us today is Matt Jansen, and he's joining us on a pretty hard day for him. So, Matt, how are you doing, first of all?
I'm doing okay. You know, first of all, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it. And this is something I don't mind talking about at all because it's important to me that Dallas's legacy lives on. And I feel like I'm one of the main voices of that, you know, amongst a few other people. I woke up this morning and one of the main things that I want to try to say is that to me, as respectful as I can say it, today is just another day, you know, because I didn't want to dwell on the fact that, like, I've tried this whole time to not, like, make a memorial of the 22nd or every 22nd or the fact that today was the day that he passed away. You know, now, granted, I did make a post today. Actually, I made two posts, and that's more so just, like, a celebration of his life. But I woke up this morning, and I'm surrounded by two guys in my house that was something that Dallas and I started together. And through what we built as a team, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have other guys who believe in me and believe in me enough to allow me to help them, you know, achieve their goals and their dreams. So, you know, I'm very, very fortunate for that. You know, I didn't want to wake up this morning and be woe is me or, anything like that because I'm blessed with the opportunity to have these guys in the house. They're looking to me for direction and guidance and I want to be able to give that to them. So, in terms of Dallas and our relationship, it was very special to me. Like I played several roles in Dallas's life. And I think that's why we got as close as we did is because I wasn't just his coach. I wasn't his friend. There was times where I almost felt like I was his dad. He came to me with some really serious stuff, and relied on me to help him with that. Financially, I tried my best I could to help him. So like I did a lot, within his life that, you know, just doing all those things, there was no way that we couldn't be close because he had to trust me, you know? So, I'm very thankful for the fact that the last week of his life, we got to spend together. I can't say enough how thankful I am for that. So, those memories are going to be lasting for me, and two, like the goals that Dallas and I had are still my goals that I feel like now I need to carry out with other people, you know? So that's, in short, you know, if you guys have more direct questions, I'd be happy to answer them, but that's kind of, you know, where my head's at right now. I'm very thankful for the outpouring of love and support that I've received today. For those of you that have experienced death, you guys know this. And those of you that haven't, like, it just hits you at the most random times, you know, like there's some times where I'm doing really good. And sometimes like the weirdest thing will set me off or driving down the road, I'll hear a song or, you know, like something like that. So it's not like so much the day, it's more so the life and the memories that we have together and the random times that those will kind of just come flooding back to you is when it's like, it's harder for me.
I'm not really on the muscular development forums anymore, like maybe like once a month, but I remember that thread you had where you were posting Dallas's daily training and diet and you're posting some of the training footage. There was some of the most epic training footage ever. And I think that thread is really like what most people are thinking of when they think of Dallas.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then also too, the training that we had, at Max Out Gym, which is a small little gym here in Oak Ridge, which is right outside of Knoxville. That was some of the strongest, freakiest stuff I've seen, you know, and we just got into that little place and just had fun. And basically, I live in Knoxville. Dallas at the time lived just north of Chattanooga. So twice a week, typically for back and legs, he would come up here. And then, you know, for smaller body parts, I'd go down there simply because the equipment was better up here. We just trained together, you know, as often as we could. He was obviously getting busier with travel and commitments and things like that, but whatever we could, we'd get together and just try to have as much fun as we could.
So Dallas McCarver, for our listeners who don't know, you can go on our website and read about his death. He was one of the up-and-coming young bodybuilders, and he passed away a year ago. So tell us a little bit about Dallas McCarver, the person, besides, you know, what we see in the social media and YouTube and stuff like that. What kind of person was he? Was he a humble person? Was he a very giving person?
Dallas had, you know, I think the things that Dallas would want to be remembered by is how he acted around kids, his love for kids, and also just like how he wanted to give to the guys in the sport that received treatment different than what he received. You know, he wanted to be a representation of the sport that was positive. You know, he wanted to be known as a guy that other guys could come to. And, you know, it's funny you ask that, because one of the biggest struggles in Dallas's head the last week of his life is that his massage therapist had just had a baby. And he took a really cute picture with the baby and posted it on Instagram. And half of the comments on the picture were more negative about, like, Dallas's size, or like, oh, Dallas, that looks like meal three for you, or whatever. And he's like, this is the hardest part for me, because I want to be the best that I can be in the world at this. But at the same time, like, I still want to be known as a human, you know, and I still want to be known as somebody that has emotion and that loves holding kids and loves being around kids. You know, so that was a big struggle that week for him, was the fact that, like, something that he put up and posted as so pure and innocent turned into this, like, Dallas is a monster, look at him next to this baby, you know. And he was trying to, like, you know, figure out a way to kind of get through that, because it bothered him, you know. Like, Dallas lit up around kids. Like, that was the one thing. You know, anytime that he was around children, he was like a big kid himself. You know, he'd chase them around the house, and yeah, granted, he was massive, but, like, the way he conducted himself around kids, you would never know it. So I think that's something that he would definitely want to be known for. Dallas put a lot of pressure on himself, you know, and I'm not going to say that he didn't, because he did. And there was a lot of times I don't even think he really fully enjoyed bodybuilding to the capability that he could have, because of the fact of the pressure that he put on himself. And granted, he did have fun, but it was like, the closer he got to a show, it was like the more he felt the weight of the world and the pressure and the expectations of that show around him. Which is why, for more or less, for our first Olympia together in 2015, it was so fun, because we went into that show with no expectations other than the expectations that we had for ourselves, which obviously were high. But when you're not hearing from this person, you're not saying, hey, this person that's in, you know, high power saying, hey, send me pictures. And this person saying, hey, how you looking every day? And, you know, like, we went into that show, it was just us. Like, nobody really cared what we looked like or what he looked like, you know. So that was a really fun prep for us, because of the fact that the pressure was non-existent for that show. So I don't know if I've really answered your question, but some of the the mainstays.
Matt, do you want kids?
I have a child, yeah.
Oh, you do? Get out. How old?
Yeah. He was born the week of the Olympia last year, and we named him after Dallas.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You really keep him off your social media?
Not really.
Maybe I'm just looking at the wrong stuff.
I post them up pretty regularly.
Okay. How has bodybuilding changed since having a child?
It's changed. I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. Like, my priorities have changed. I realize, you know, like, for me, bodybuilding, Jordan, my wife, was always a part of my bodybuilding, like, in every sense of the word. Like, whenever I prep for a show, she would do all my cardio with me. She would train with me. She would eat with me. She would diet with me, whether or not she was prepping or not. You know, but Jordan, and one of the first things that attracted me to Jordan was the the caregiver and nurturer in her, and how she was around kids. So literally, like, the second she found out she was pregnant, like, that switch just turned off. So, you know, she is 100% mom, and I'm very thankful and fortunate for that, because she does a great job with raising Dallas. You know, but now I guess, you know, like, this was an internal struggle that I had for my prep for USA's, is like, I wanted to win, or I wanted to do well so bad, because of the fact that, like, my time's not my own anymore, you know, and now I'm taking time when I go to the gym, and when I do cardio, I'm taking time away from them. So if I'm going to take time away from them, like, I want it to pay dividend, I want it to pay off, or else there's no point in me doing it. You know, because at the end of the day, we're only promised that day, you know, so I need to make the most of that day with seeing my son. But I am very fortunate to be a coach and be a coach that works from home. You know, so I've gotten to see Dallas, like, grow up literally on a daily basis, and that's been really fun. But, you know, like, it's hard to put into words, but any father, any mother, like, everything that you do and every action that you take and every thought process you have, if you love that child, like, they're included either consciously or subconsciously in that thought process. You know, it makes me want to work harder for him. It makes me, want to achieve things to set his future up, you know, and that's important to me. Like, if Dallas wants to do something, whether it's play travel ball or whatever it is, like, I never want the financial aspect of that to even be discussed around him. Like, I just want him to be able to do what he wants to do, and, you know, he provide. So that's, you know, it's definitely life changing. Like, I wake up every morning with more of a purpose now. I go to bed every night with him on my mind. And, you know, that was non-existent before, because he wasn't here, you know? So that's, in a nutshell, I would say that's probably the most important factors to me.
35 years from now, he'll be Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
If he wants to.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, before we move on to this topic, how's Dallas's family doing? The Dallas McCarver, how's his family and friends doing up there in Tennessee? Have they kind of come to grips with, you know, do they have the attitude? Well, because I had a friend of mine actually passed away as well, playing tennis of all things, died of a stroke. And his family a year later said, hey, he died doing what he loved to do, so we can take solace with that. Is there, his family think the same thing, or do they say, wow, we wish we would have not encouraged him to bodybuild?
No, I mean, it's not been any of that, you know, and honestly, I had a really, like, deep conversation with his dad right after he passed away. And his dad basically said, in short, you know, Dallas died doing what he wanted to do. And if he wasn't doing this, he would have been a very unhappy person. So I'm happy that he lived his life in the way that he wanted to live it, you know? And obviously, I mean, the death of a child is never easy. You know, so I'm going to kind of relate this back to my parents, because 2 weeks before Dallas passed away, my brother passed away. So my parents still are really grieving, you know, and with Dallas's family, like, they don't speak to me as much as I hope that they would. And it's not because of any disconnect. It's just, it's either I reach out or they reach out to me, but we don't speak as often as we should. I'll say that. But when I do speak to them, like, it's very evident that they're still grieving and they miss him. Actually, last year we got a lot of rain. So when they buried him, the ground was very wet. So they just did his headstone last week as a family, and they sent me pictures of that, which I'm going to go visit. But, you know, obviously it's still very fresh on their mind because of who Dallas was in terms of, you know, as a person, as a bodybuilder in the bodybuilding community. You know, so they're still surrounded by bodybuilding, but yet now absent of Dallas within that, you know, so unless they fully disconnect themselves from the whole IFBB, you know, it's going to be a constant memory in their mind of their son. You know, I think his sister has taken it very hard, just because they were kind of like, they were very close. And not only were they very close, but they also communicated about things that families communicate about, you know, whether that's internal things in the family or whatever. And now like that was her only sibling. So she doesn't have that anymore in her life. You know, so I know that she's still taking it hard, but we've seen her a few times. She's come up and eat with us in Knoxville. We went to a show last year, the Flex Lewis Classic, and spent some time with them there. You know, but I know that they have not healed from this. You know, it's not a short term thing by any means.
Matt, how old are you?
29.
Okay, so you're a fairly young guy. You're regarded as being one of the best prep coaches. Like, you're one of the few prep coaches who really, there's nothing negative about. You know, certain prep coaches, they'll say it's all drugs or he's all diuretics or, you know, like there's really nothing negative people talk about when it comes to you. Where do you think this passion for training people came from? Were you like always into helping people? Did you maybe like coach sports growing up or where do you think this passion came from?
Well, so in terms of my own performance, you know, I grew up, I wanted to be a professional athlete. And it's like I was always knocking on the door and I was close, but at the same time, I was never the best on the team once I got to teams that really mattered. So, like, then and there, I kind of started to see, like, okay, maybe my role in this is going to be to help those who have those gifts and those who have those abilities get to that level that I might not be able to get to. You know, and I was very fortunate. I grew up playing soccer at a very high level. So I had Olympic development coaches that, kind of, I don't want to say nurtured me, but like started to formulate my thought process in terms of coaching, which is so much more than just, you know, whether it's the X's and O's of soccer or the diet aspect of nutrition and bodybuilding. Like, whenever a coach speaks, especially now, like Coach Calipari of the University of Kentucky, Alabama's head coach, Belichick, when he says things that are actually profound, you know, I try to listen and pick up to these things because there's so much cross area in coaching that made coaches successful. So if you weed out the fact that they're talking about football or they're talking about this or that and really kind of get to the meat and potatoes of what they're actually talking about, you know, in terms of communicating with athletes and how you get specific athletes to respond versus some types of communication won't get that athlete to respond. Like, I've always like really liked to pick those things up. Like, I was a kid that growing up, I would listen to the coach's press conference after games, you know, and that's just always been a part of who I am. I've always loved and been fascinated and wanted to learn as much as I could about building muscle. You know, it's just, I've said this several times, so if you guys have heard this before, I apologize, but my mom always tells a story, especially now, like when I was 5, 6 years old, I would be the kid that when she'd go grocery shopping, I'd go to the magazine section, she'd come back and I'd be looking at Flex magazines, you know, so like it's been a part of me for a very long time. You know, I loved watching Rocky with my dad. That was like something that we did together. And even through the Rocky movies, you see the progression of Rocky, like that fascinated me at the time. You know, from Rocky 1 to Rocky 4, he's a completely different human. You know, so like I was always drawn to that. And how does that happen and why does it happen? You know, so like as I grew older, I had the opportunity to play Division II soccer and I got hurt my freshman year playing soccer. And that's when I really channeled all my energy into bodybuilding and coaching, you know, within that. I went to the University of Kentucky and did my internship for 6 months with their Olympic sports program. So I trained all the athletes. And once I did that, that was when I really learned that or came to the conclusion that I wanted to try to make it or break it on my own. So after that, my wife and I got married. I had 2 short-term jobs, and then I fully committed myself to coaching. So that's kind of, you know, the nuts and bolts of how I've gotten to where I am. I definitely have learned from some great coaches or what I consider great coaches. And I thank each one of those guys for their role in mentoring and developing me, you know, but also too, like when muscular development was big and when RX muscle was big, like any coach that had any type of video, whether it was Hani or Neil or any of those guys, like anything that they said, and even if it was like complete nonsense sometimes, like I wanted to watch it, you know, and I wanted to formulate an opinion for myself, and I wanted to see like, okay, does this really have merit or does it not? Somebody else too, like I think some of the things that if you guys go back and you watch old Jay Cutler videos, like his DVDs, there are some gold in those DVDs from a nutritional standpoint. And I realize that he's working with Chris Aceto, but I think Jay had a very, you know, found knowledge of nutrition on his own. Like he really grasped what he was doing rather than just following what somebody was telling him. Because when he spoke and how he spoke, you could tell that he understood what he was talking about. So, you know, Jay is somebody that I still look up to and respect to this day, you know, for what he accomplished and the role that he has in our sport and how he's brought it to where it is. So, you know, that's, I guess in short, I started to sense that I didn't have the gifts and abilities to take it to the top, but I've always believed that I could help others and communicate with others in a way to help them get to the top. You know, and once I had that belief in myself, like I just went for it.
So Matt, I mean, you're a bodybuilder and you're a hell of a bodybuilder. I mean, you're going to win your pro card. It's just a matter of time, but you've said yourself that you're a coach first and a bodybuilder second. Is it ever mentally hard to be taking the coach role first? Like, do you ever think like, hey, I wish that was me stepping on the Olympia stage? Cause I can tell you truthfully, if I was in your position, it would be hard for me because I would rather be the athlete than the coach.
No, you know, it's honestly not, because I do think that a part of me is up there, you know, like with these guys. So it gets me emotional talking about it. But, you know, like when you put everything you have into something from both sides, like, that's a reflection of both of us up there on that stage, you know? So, I do feel like, but like in a selfish aspect, no, I don't, it's not like I wish I was up there and they weren't, you know, but at the same time, I think I do shed some light and bring some perspective, to the fact that like they are accomplishing and setting out to do something huge, you know, like even this morning, like just jokingly, as we were leaving for cardio, I was like, you guys are prepping for the Olympia, you know, like that's huge. And sometimes I think these guys are so focused on the goal that they don't really sit back and be like, man, like I'm prepping for the biggest show in the world, you know, like, and that's awesome.
We just had Charles on and yeah, it was the same thing. It was, he kind of said like, I'm prepping for the Olympia. And it almost like, it didn't like phase him. Like, hey, I'm about to step on the best bodybuilding stage on earth.
Yeah, you know, and even like when Nathan, when he first got here, he got in town on a Wednesday, and then that Saturday, he guest posed. And when we were backstage together, he's like, man, sometimes I just don't really like doing this. Like, I don't feel like I'm in pristine condition yet, and yada, yada, yada. And I said, Nathan, I said, you need to realize that you're doing this because you're one of the best in the world, you know, like, and I would kill to be where you're at.
How is Nathan doing? I know he was going through some blood sugar issues and I think he found out he was diabetic. Is that correct?
None of that is correct.
He did an interview with RX Muscle saying like he was having some issues with blood sugar or something like that.
When was this?
I think it was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I have no clue of that, but he has no issues with either of those, and he is definitely not diabetic.
Okay, I maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was someone else.
So I have a question. Can you handicap, you know, the Olympia this year? Do you think Phil Heath is a shoo-in to win, or do you think there's going to be some surprises in the top three?
I think Phil's going to still win.
Do you think it'll be close at least?
We'll see. I still think it's Phil's title 100% this year.
What about the 212? We just had Derek Lunsford on and he's pretty nuts.
I honestly think Derek will be second this year. I think Flex will win. Flex will be done. And I think Derek will win next year. That's my opinion on that.
Derek,
I think Derek will have a very hard time making 212 ever again. he's so gifted and so muscle bound. You know, I just think he's going to have a really hard time making that class again.
He's 23, hey?
Yeah, crazy.
He's just a baby. But yeah, his wisdom is way beyond his age. Like, when I interviewed him, he was, like, one of the most mature guests we've ever had on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good guy for sure. He's definitely got his head screwed on straight, and he's around the right people, and he's made the right decisions. And, you know, he's got a very, very bright future, that's for sure.
Talk to us a little bit about the new divisions. What are your thoughts on Classic Physique and Men's Physique?
Classic Physique, I actually enjoy to a certain extent. I just think that it still needs to be refined a bit. I think there needs to be some ratio measurements as well as just a height and weight. So what I mean by that is like shoulder width ratio to waist ratio to quad ratio. I think all those things should be implemented into, you know, basically where you show up at a show, and if you meet those qualifications and you compete in Classic. If you don't meet those qualifications, then you compete the next day in bodybuilding, and the choice is up to the measurement system versus, hey, I just want to compete in Classic because I feel Classic. You know, I think that's where there's still some – the guys that are winning Classic and the guys that are doing well in Classic, I am absolutely 100% impressed by. But if you look across the division, the classes itself – you know, half of the guys in there, you're like, that's just a small bodybuilder. That's a bodybuilder that hasn't taken the time to mature. That guy's just straight up and down, but he's hitting a twist in his front double bicep, you know, like, you know, so I think there still needs to be some refinement to the class, but the class does excite me. You know, I'm a huge friend, fan, and supporter of Chris Bumstead. You know, I think he's Classic. I think that's the standard. I think that's what they should look at in terms of measurements and then get some ratios off of that and then look at somebody like Breon, who's a different size. Look at somebody like Ruffin, who, again, is a different size, and take those types of ratios and then get a system in place for those guys. I think it would just make the whole division more competitive, and it would be a certain look, a certain consistent look on stage all the time, which I think is what they need. Men's physique is a hard division. You know, I take nothing away from those guys because you look up on that stage and it's a lot harder to quantify men's physique than it is bodybuilding. Like bodybuilding, 9 times out of 10, the guys walk out and you know who the clear winner is. Men's physique, you might have 10 guys that look awesome, but they're just a little different from each other. You know, so at that point, it's like, how do you determine who beats who? You know, is it just preference? Is it, again, does it come down to ratios, you know, or does it come down to, do I want the bigger physique or the smaller physique? So that's from a coach's standpoint, that's my only frustration with men's physique, is the fact that you could have somebody 100% dead on the money and have no clue, you know, where they're going to place, versus if I have somebody 100% dead on the money in bodybuilding, I have a pretty good idea where they're going to fall. You know, within a placing or two.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. How has social media changed things? Like you kind of just mentioned that, you know, the magazines are kind of dead. How has that changed your business?
I mean, it's given me a platform. You know, I think it gives a lot of people a platform. And I think what you do with that platform over time is what's important. You know, it's changed coaching as a whole. Like I was just, I was at Jay's house a few weeks ago. And when he started this whole thing, he had FedEx pictures, 2-day FedEx pictures. And if the pictures weren't right, they were already 2 days old. And, you know, the process had to start all over again. So it's allowed and given me the opportunity to be successful, that potentially I couldn't have been successful in 20 years ago. You know, it's because at that point, that's why California was such a destination, because everybody trained at Gold's. So if you want to be a coach, you better get out to Gold's and, you know, and try to make it. So the whole landscape has changed. And I think overall it's changed for the better. I don't think every aspect of social media is better. But I am thankful for social media because it's allowed me to do what I love, and it's allowed me to do it and be successful in a way, you know, because it just puts everything on a, you know, it just puts everything through a microphone, you know, for lack of a better term. But if you're having success, social media just amplifies that success. And it just kind of sends echoes throughout the industry in terms of, hey, you know, like, I mean, that's how I got Charles. Like, and something too, you know, whether you guys want to believe me or not, I am far too busy to be nitpicking and picking off athletes. That's something that I get criticized for, is I just pick guys off and, you know, message them on Facebook and say, hey, bro, I got some advice for you. The guys in this house right now will tell you firsthand, I have no time for no such thing as that. You know, like, I don't. You know, the guys that work with me, they reach out to me. They want to work with me because they're drawn to what we're doing. They're drawn to the success that I'm having with other guys. You know, and I'm thankful for that. But this me picking off clients, and it's complete nonsense.
For any of our listeners, you can go back 3 episodes and you can listen to the interview we did with Charles. I actually asked him what made him pick Matt Jansen, and he specifically said he reached out to you.
Yeah.
So Charles is staying
with you. Too, like, Charles and I, we started to develop a relationship back at Nationals in 2016. We talked in the gym at Nationals, and Charles yelled at me across the gym and said something, and I was like, man, I don't know what he just said, but it doesn't sound too good. And anyway, it was his way of sounding good. But it sounded like he said, hey, I'm about to come over there and beat you up.
So what did he say?
Don't worry about it. It's for me and Charles to know. You know, that we talked at Nationals, and we just we even had kind of a mutual connection at Nationals. So I'm very close friends with Turner Riddle. Turner and I were there training legs. Charles was training chest. So we just kind of were chatting in between sets. Turner, I would say, respects Charles tremendously because they competed together at Nationals in 2014. So they were both light heavies in 2014. Obviously, Turner is still pushing for his pro card. Charles is now an Olympian, or soon to be an Olympian. So after we got done training, Turner was like, hey, man, I want to hit some shots with you and just get side by side with you. So I took some shots. You know, we just shot, you know, shot some banner for a few minutes, and that was it. And then after the indie show, you could see that Charles was upset with his placing. And he came out of the backstage area and was just a little fired up. And Nathan and I were right there by the door. And I just called him over and I said, hey, man, I said, you know, you're right there. You just got to keep chipping away. But don't let your emotions get the best of you in front of all these people. You know, and he just thanked me for that. And that was it. You know, like, we didn't talk about coaching. We didn't talk about any of that. And then shortly thereafter, he got my number and then called me. So, you know, that's kind of how it worked with Charles and I.
So I have a question. When are you guys headed out there? Because Olympia is September 13. Are you guys headed out there soon to kind of, you know, get your hotel and do all that stuff?
We're going to leave the Sunday prior to the Olympia. So we're going to head out. You know, the guys will get on stage Friday afternoon or Friday evening. We're going to head out on Sunday.
Okay. Are you guys doing anything when you get there? Besides just focusing 100%, are you guys going to go to a strip club? No, I'm kidding.
Nah, definitely not going to a strip club. Want to go out there and get acclimated. Just kind of be in a relaxed setting, you know, like as much as the hustle and bustle that week is, I find that the earlier you get there, the more relaxed you're able to be through the process versus showing up on, say, Wednesday and jumping right into meetings and doing all that kind of stuff. So we're going to get out there Sunday, get settled in. Nathan loves to shop, so I'm sure we'll do some shopping, and then we're just gonna train and eat and rest and just chill.
Not even one lap dance?
Not even one lap dance. I'm married. I'm good, man.
One question I got for you, Matt, is, I mean, you're inviting these people into your house. Like, I mean, that's completely unheard of, that you're inviting these people not just for a day, but to actually come live with you. Are you doing that because that's just the type of person you are and you think it'd be fun? Are you doing that because you think that's the best way to coach them?
I think it's, well, I, you know, like, I don't like talking about myself, but I enjoy having people here. I enjoy getting to be relational with them and get to know them. And yeah, I mean, it does make a difference having guys in my house and getting to see them every morning and getting to see their emotions through the day and getting to see where their energy levels are at. Like, that all plays a huge role in my opinion, you know? You really get to know each other on a deeper level which 100% correlates to bodybuilding. So yeah, like I enjoy it. My wife is a saint, you know, and obviously I'm sure there's some days where she'd rather have the house to herself. You know, but it's just what we do. Like I want it to be different, in my approach. And this is part of the way that I feel that I am different. And I'm not saying I'm the only coach that has people at their house. I'm not saying that at all. You know, but it's not the norm. And, I've had some very, very successful preps with people living in my house. And I think that track record speaks for itself.
Is there any butting of heads? Because, like, I mean, you and them, you guys are buddies, but when it really comes down to it, Charles and Nathan are competitors.
Well, so Nathan's been living with me for a few weeks. Charles just came in for this week. You know, but I can't say enough about how both of these guys conduct themselves as professionals. You know, and two, like, the stress in the house is very, very low with Nathan. He is, the way that he handles and controls and actually doesn't live in a stressed world, is beyond impressive to me. I look up to it. I respect it. You know, both of these guys are just so thankful to be able to bodybuild and be professional athletes. And I truly mean that. Like, I'm not being superficial. Like, they love to bodybuild and they're thankful that they get to wake up and bodybuild. And they're thankful that they're not in prison or on the streets or the life that they used to live. Like, they're thankful for that, you know, and they conduct themselves in that way. Now, obviously I'm saying this, I want this to be taken in the right context. Nathan is a proven Olympian. Charles is not a proven Olympian. Charles and I have very high standards for ourselves this year, but at the same time, I want this prep for Charles to be as stress-free as possible, because the reality of it is, with the potential that he has, this is going to be the only one that's stress-free, you know, where he can truly enjoy the whole process, truly enjoy being an Olympian, truly enjoy, you know, just taking it in and stepping on that stage and getting his Olympia jacket and going to the press conference and going to the meet and greet. And I just want him to soak all that up. You know, now, do I believe that he's in a place much higher than most rookies? Yes, I do. But that's not where the emphasis is for me. The emphasis is on bringing the best Charles we can, which is an internal thing. And then the external thing is I want him to enjoy, you know, even booking his tickets and sending his information for his biography and, you know, like whatever, like I just want him to enjoy all that. And I think he's done a very good job of that so far.
A lot of our listeners want to know, Matt, what's next for you? I mean, like obviously the next 3 weeks you're focusing on the Olympia, but when's the next time you're planning on stepping on stage?
So my goal is to do the USA's again next year. As soon as I stepped off stage, I knew that's what I wanted to do. You know, it turned into from a belief in myself to actually quantifiable evidence that I could do it. I just know some of the changes that I need to make. And two, like being a professional for me isn't about just attaining a card. It's more about the progress and the look. So sure, I could have gone on to North Americans, but I think me doing North Americans would have taken away from what I got going on right now, which is my first priority. Actually, my first priority is my family, which would have taken away from that. My second priority is me being a coach, which would have taken away from that from an energy perspective, you know, because when Nathan got here, I wanted to be fed up enough and had enough energy to be able to push him in the gym, set for set, rep for rep, not always weight for weight, but intensity and effort for intensity and effort. And if I'm at a depleted state, more depleted than his depleted state, that's two guys just being depleted together and not all that much fun. And, you know, I want to find a way for them to always look up to and respect me, even though I might not be moving the most poundage, you know, and that's why they come here. They don't come here for me to be tired. They come here for me to push them, you know, and it's my job to do that. So within that goal, my personal goal for myself is to make the progress that I need, which I really think needs to come down to my shoulders and chest, and basically get the front of my upper body to match my back and my legs. And then I'll step back on USA stage next year, which also from a coaching perspective does make the most sense for me to do that show.
Talk just a little bit about your wife. I mean, it sounds like you got an amazing support system behind you. How did you meet her? Because I honestly want to meet my version of a Jordan.
And, yeah.
How has she helped you? Like, it sounds like she's been with you since day one beside you.
She has, really. I mean, like, so we met seventh grade. I had a crush on her in eighth grade. We dated in ninth grade for a little bit, if you want to consider it dating, because we didn't have a car. Sophomore year, our schedules were completely different. So we didn't really even talk sophomore year, but like, we still, like, if we passed each other in the hall, like, it wasn't like, hey, you know, like, there was just always kind of something there. Jordan herself is a very, very competitive athlete. So we dated basically junior year leading up to playoff basketball for high school. She decided that we needed to break up because she needed to focus on the playoffs. And then we got together. We were kind of on and off the rest of junior year. We got back together the summer of senior year, and we've been together ever since. So we dated all of senior year. We were apart for 5 years. She went to the University of Kentucky, and I stayed home in Georgia and went to school in Georgia. So we were apart for 5 years, dated all throughout college. I did my internship. She got a job at the University of Kentucky. And then we got married shortly thereafter in 2012. And she has, I mean, she's been a part of, she's seen me in every role I've played. She's seen me at the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, everywhere in between. You know, and like I said, like, up until we had Dallas, like, we literally did everything together. You know, most of our marriage, we only had one vehicle, simply because we chose to have one vehicle, because we'd rather do things together than do them apart. So like, that's just, and even now, like, she helps me with the back end of the stuff. Like, I want my focus to be on coaching. So she helps me with inquiries. She helps me with, you know, the bookkeeping and the taxes and those things that don't revolve, you know, aren't directly in the coaching realm, but yet are a very important part of what I do. So, you know, that's her role. And I couldn't be more thankful for who she is, you know, and how she accepts what I do, because it is crazy, you know. And two, like, I'm a little crazy because I take this job very seriously, you know, and I want to be the absolute best that I can be at it, you know. So there's times like right now, like, I might not emotionally always be here because I have people stepping on the Olympia stage. And to me, like, that's the Super Bowl, you know, and that's how I treat it.
I think we might have lost Matt there.
I'm still here. Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, man, you got a good wife. I mean, I don't think too many wives would be okay with having two random guys come live with you for a month.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, in 2015, Dallas lived with me for 9 weeks. 2016, Dallas lived with me for 6 weeks. Last year, after Dallas passed away, Jocelyn Artowitz and his wife came and lived with us for a month. Nathan has lived with us now for, you know, by the end of this prep, it's going to be 14 weeks. You know, and not only that, that's just like the top end guys. Like, one of my really good friends, Cade, has spent numerous times here at the house. Turner spent numerous times here at the house. Michaela Acock prepped for a few shows here at the house. One being her pro card. She also prepped for the Toronto Pro here, which she won. You know, so it's just a part of what we do. It's a part of, you know, that's why we have the Camp Jansen name, because, you know, Dallas kind of coined it that, but he's like, this is like literally like camp. Like, you just come here and you get better. And it's a weird thing, but it's like everybody's progress just kind of picks up once they're here.
So talk to us a little bit about the Camp Jansen program. Are you able to pick anyone who comes to you, or like, are you have to be selective now because you have so many inquiries?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously I have to be selective or else I'll be running a hotel, you know, like, I just, you know, like with Nathan, like Nathan is somebody that truly needs me because he lives in the UK and he feels that in order for him to be his best, he needs to be with me. You know, so that's why he gets first dibs, you know, and that's a priority for me. So, you know, but at the same time, like, I'm not actively turning people down either. It's just, I think it comes from both spectrums. Like, some people have jobs where they can't come stay here for weeks at a time, you know, and things like that. So,
I totally screwed up. The person who had the diabetic and insulin and blood sugar issues, that was Lionel Bajecki. That wasn't Nathan D'Asher. I'm sorry. That was my mistake.
All good. All good. Yeah, Nathan's healthy, man.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let Trevor finish up the show because I know we're running out of time. But here's a question that all of our listeners would want to know. What is a typical day for you like? Do you get up, train first thing? Do you do cardio or do you train in the afternoon? What's a typical normal day when it's outside of the Mr. Olympia?
Okay, so when I don't have anybody here, like last offseason, for example, this is my day. Well, we had a son. So, okay, prior to me having a son, this was my day. In the offseason, I'd wake up. Basically, would just get. I feel like I always have somebody in prep, so my prep updates are typically first priority. Some of my prep athletes text me, so basically I wake up to text messages first thing in the morning or email. I get their responses out, and then from there I'll have breakfast. I sit here and I eat my breakfast, and I just get to work. You know, if I have some errands to run or go to the grocery store, I'll typically do that after my first meal. Come back and I'll work through meal two. After meal two, I'll continue to work. I typically do like to shut off before I go train. So I usually like to lay down for like 45 minutes. Then I'll have my pre-workout meal. Then I'll get my shakes together. Then I'll come train, come back home, spend some time with my wife. We'll have a show on or a ball game or whatever. And then I'll just basically be sitting on the couch emailing through the rest of the evening. And that's typically my day in a nutshell. Now, right now, it's similar to that, but a lot more intensive. So we wake up right now, within 20 to 30 minutes, we're out the door. We go do cardio, and typically we alternate. So we either do calves or abs every morning and alternate those two. So we do cardio, calves or abs. And then, we'll come back to the house. And then I'll start preparing breakfast. We'll cook breakfast. We'll eat breakfast. I'll work. Again, same thing. If we need to go run to the grocery store or drop a package off, or, you know, get something for Nathan or whatever that is, we'll do that. Come back and eat meal two. I'll continue to work. We might crash for about 30 minutes, eat meal three. You know, I typically work through the time that we go to the gym, come back home, eat. And then, you know, like today I got home, and just emailed you guys real quick, jumped on this call, and then I'll have, you know, emails to do once we get off. So, I mean, I'm basically just emailing and working all throughout the day. Typically I like to shut the computer down about 30 minutes, at least 30 minutes before I go to bed, just to kind of let my head calm down, have my last meal, and then I go to bed.
Talk to our listeners a little bit. If they want to work with you, if they want to learn more about your paid forums, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Yeah, okay. So my website is camp-jansen.com, and that has free content on it. It has paid content on it. It has forums on it. It has all the information about coaching. And I still like to have a personal touch to coaching, even though Jordan does help me out with it. So when you read about coaching, it's gonna give you an email to contact. And I also like to get information from you, like where you're at currently with your training, where you're at currently with your diet, what your physique goals are, what your current physique looks like, and then we'll go through that. And then, you know, if we find that it's a good working relationship, we will start. And that's how you get in touch with me. I am active on Instagram to an extent, but the absolute best way to get in touch with me is coaching@camp-jansen.com. In terms of, you know, wanting to actually work with me, DMs are hit or miss for me because it's not my first priority, and I do try to get to them as well, but, emails are my first priority. So that's where I would prefer that things stay through. Plus I'm also just, I'm numbers and I'm information oriented. So I just don't like sending some things through DM and some things through message and some things through email. Like I like to keep an email chain of everything, and that's how I prefer to work, because I think it allows consistency on both ends of what's actually going on.
I agree with you completely there. I mean, when you have clients and they try to text you updates and then email you updates, it's just
it's all over the place. Yeah.
I agree with you. I really appreciate you doing this interview, Matt, especially 3 weeks out from the Olympia.
Yeah,
my
man.
My last question for you is, because you're so busy, and, you know, because so many people want to train under you, have you ever thought about hiring, like, an assistant to help you? Like, have, like, a coach work under you?
Yeah. I started out like that. I had, like, a team of coaches that we were all individuals, but yet I was still, like, kind of the head of that. And I just didn't like it. Not that I didn't like them or I didn't like what they were doing, but I felt like their work always reflected back on me, even though I didn't have a direct say in the work that was being done. And two, you know, the prime time athletes that I desire to work with, they don't want to work with a team. You know, they want to work with an individual. And two, like if I need to better allocate my time and have other business opportunities, because if I'm that busy, then the quality of my work is going to go down. So typically I maintain around 65 athletes at a time, and the way the business works, they kind of just come and go at that rate. But that's typically my roster. And then, you know, I have a few other, I would say maybe more like 70, 75, but that's kind of where I'm at. And then just organically, they kind of work themselves in and out based off of if they're prepping or not prepping, or some people just aren't happy with the program, or they decide they don't want to do it or whatever. And then new people come on, and it just kind of continues to cycle through like that. So, I would say my wife is my assistant, but my wife has no control over the dieting aspect. She just does the other things that allow me to focus on that. But I don't want to have somebody underneath me coaching, because they themselves are an individual and we don't think the same, you know, like there's no way that two individuals are going to have the same exact thought process on everything. So if that's the case, then they might as well just represent themselves, and I'm going to represent myself, and I think it's going to be better off that way. There are some coaches, though, that when you email me, if you don't see me as the right fit, or maybe I'm too expensive or whatever, there's other coaches that I recommend that I 100% agree with their approach and their philosophy, how they take care of their athletes. So that's kind of how I channel that myself.
Matt, to finish off the show, give us your favorite memory about Dallas.
Man, that's tough. If I had to boil it down to one, well, okay, two things. I would say the 2015 Olympia as a whole. If I had to boil it down to one thing, I would say the drive from Lexington to Louisville to get on the airplane for the 2015 Olympia was probably my favorite memory.
For your host, Trevor Kuritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, Matt Jansen. So another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.